The West Live. The West Live with Jenna Clark. Brought to you by Neds. Take it to the Neds level. Gamble responsibly. 1-800-858-858.
The entire world caught its breath over the weekend when it was announced that President Trump has had tested positive to COVID-19. What on earth does this mean going forward in probably the most bizarre presidential election we've ever seen? Joining me now is Dr. Aidan Warren, who is the Associate Professor of International Relations at RMIT. What does this setback mean for the Trump campaign, Dr. Warren?
Good morning. Well, look, this is a massive setback. Basically, I would argue that this October was supposed to be the turnaround month for the Trump administration, particularly after trailing Democratic nominee Joe Biden all year. And basically, it was meant to be a slingshot into really trying to secure the second term. But this has really put a big halt into his charge towards November, indeed.
Interestingly, watching some of the social media footage and also the media footage coming out over the weekend about him releasing videos on Twitter, and then we've seen this bizarre motorcade as he's leaving the military hospital today. What is he trying to prove? I mean, can I be so bold to say, did he even have the virus in the first place?
Look, I would say yes, he did. I try not to get caught up in those various theories going around, but they have gone around. I understand that. But make no mistake, you are seeing Trump, classic Trump, coming out. He's never the sort of guy who's going to admit any sort of weakness, and it's all about bravado. It's all about symbolism. And we see it coming to the fore again, particularly in relation to, you know, of course, that bizarre issue today in which you see him, you know, have a little run around DC to wave to people. I mean, really just, you know, it was a disturbing photo op if I've ever seen one. But basically, he's going to try and at least symbolically try and be bold, look strong, and then he can say in a week, hey, look, it wasn't a big deal. I beat this and on we go. It's really going to be trying to charge towards that mantle in November 3, and I think he's running out of time.
Yeah, indeed. That leads us into the next debate, which is slated here in Australia to take place on October 16. It'll be a town hall style. Do you think that this will go ahead, considering he appears to have beaten the virus anyway, so it's all full steam ahead for the continuation of the campaign?
Look, it's hard to say because we really have been getting mixed messages from, of course, Trump's PR people, of course, Meadows, and then, of course, the medicos in Washington, D.C. So that's probably one thing. And remember, it's not just about 2 weeks of Trump being locked down. Of course, he needs to have the physicality to be able to cope with that. So long story short, I'm still not sure whether he'll get to the town hall level. And, of course, this week we do have the Pence and Kamala Harris going. So that in itself will be quite interesting.
Now, given polling has been a massive issue, specifically in the US election in 2016 and also probably our federal election here in 2019, can they be trusted?
I think they can be trusted more than they can be in 2016. I've been speaking to colleagues and so forth in DC, and some have assured me that basically the methodology, the approaches have changed dramatically, more significantly from 2016 to really provide those substantive guardrails to mitigate any sort of notion of being so out of whack as they were in 2016. It is going to come down to those 7 to 8 key states, and really, as you know, with the US Electoral College electoral system, it's really where the weight of the vote falls. But from what I've gathered, it's going to take a big turnaround for Trump to really get up in November 3rd.
Interesting. Now, given those swing states, which are traditionally places like Florida and Pennsylvania and places like that, Texas has traditionally been a red state for the Republicans. Is it now a swing state?
I still think it's a bit too early to say it's a swing state. I mean, it's a matter of time before it will get turned into a Democratic state, according to some business from the East and West Coast has mobilised and moved in. It's become more of a diverse state, particularly Dallas. But, you know, I would argue that it would still remain, I would argue, a Republican state this election. But it is indeed shifting. But again, in terms of those other states that you've mentioned, Florida and so forth, they'll be the major states, Florida, North Carolina, Wisconsin to some extent, Illinois, and there's a couple of others in there. Wisconsin, I think I've just mentioned. Those will be the key ones that we need to really keep an eye on.
Yeah, sure. Interestingly, back to the polls, I remember seeing something published in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago, and regardless of what people think of which way that sort of sways, there was an interesting question, and like you say about the scope of the polls moving forward, there was a question in that that made me scratch my head, and it was basically like, how do you think your neighbour will vote in the election? What would be, why would that be included, do you think? Is that just to, like you say before, to broaden the scope of the of what people are thinking and what people in the suburbs are thinking?
Yeah, very. It's a very good question. I mean, it is about the suburbs. It will come down to the suburbs. There's a lot of debates of whether this election will be about COVID versus law and order. But I think that that comes down to what is viewed as to be the covert Trump voter. You know, the sort of voter who doesn't go to the rallies. Probably is an Orthodox Republican, but is quite happy for Trump, notwithstanding all his bombastic and crass behaviour. They're quite happy for him to keep going along his deregulation and conservative sort of actions and policies. So I think that that could be one way of looking at it, and just also just, again, trying to really tease out the data even further. But make no mistake, there is that sort of that covert, you know, secretive Trump voter that is well documented in the United States who really does lay very low.
Well, we saw, I guess, in 2016, he did very well amongst white women, which was interesting considering there was a white woman running on the other ballot paper. Do you think that we will see the rise in 2020 of the quiet American?
Of the quiet American,
yeah.
In what context?
In terms of like what we saw in the Australian election, where it was people that are probably not that politically engaged, but enjoyed, you know, what they were seeing from the coalition.
You know, I think this time around, from what I'm gathering, I think that people are more set and more made up their minds. I don't think there's going to be a big shift. Trump was still an unknown quantity in 2016. People thought that he would settle down. I think that there is that element out there. I do think that there is that Trump opponent that lays low. And you're right, they very prominent in the Australian election. I think it will show its head, but I still think, if I have to make a call, that I think Biden will defeat Trump. I think it'll come down to other factors that will mitigate that. For instance, if Trump has a significant lead on the election night, and it's dependent on Democratic votes coming in over the next few days, well, you know as well as I know where that could lead to and what may happen over those few days from November 3rd to, say, November 10th. There would be, it can just lead to all sorts of concerning possibilities.
So do you think that we'll see, like we sort of saw in 2000 with Al Gore and Bush, and then we saw with Clinton and Trump in 2016, do you think that Biden, given that he may be the underdog going into this election, we may not get an announcement of who the president will be for a couple of days, given that they want to probably be thoroughly counting all of the votes?
I do not think there will be a clear defining winner that night. I have these discussions quite regularly, and the most common scenario that's coming up from people that I respect and so forth in the DC arena, of course, is the notion that Trump will hold a substantive lead on the night, and it'll be dependent on the right mechanisms allowing for the election to take its course and for those electoral votes to come in. Now, of course, that comes into other sort of concerns relating to mail and other impediments, and even Trump going on the front foot and just declaring it. Yeah. And so there's a lot of concerns that I worry about. And then, of course, if there is this ambiguity over the, you know, subsequent days after the November 3rd, then there could be, of course, be discord and so forth on in the streets and so forth. But that's the worst case scenario. But I do think that there's a good chance that Trump will hold a substantive lead on the election night, probably around 10 p.m. Eastern time. Mm-hmm. And then from there on, it'll be dependent on being patient and reliance on the Democratic votes coming in. Remember, the 2016 came down to 100,000 votes.
Yeah.
Falling in the wrong places. Clinton won it by 3 million votes in terms of the popular vote. But in that college system, it didn't fall the right way for her, and hence the reason we have Donald J. Trump in power now.
Indeed. So do you think that is that how it can work? Can the president actually declare the winner, and that's fine? without...
No, certainly not. No, I'm not saying that, but I wouldn't want to give that. I'm just saying that in terms of having nerves of steel Trump having that lead, say, around 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the United States, mm-hmm. and he making that call, that in itself would be adding confusion and would be adding a lot of turmoil into the equation, if that makes sense. That in itself would be not helpful to a clean electoral process.
No, not at all. I guess my final question, Dr. Warren, is because everything relates to us. Four more years of Trump, what does that mean? What does that outcome mean for Australia?
Look, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of Trump opponents here. I'll be honest, I used to come across a lot more Trump opponents in Australia in places like Melbourne and Sydney than I do, having spent a lot of time in DC. DC's 90% Democratic voting area. But mm-hmm. that aside, I would argue that it'll be business as usual for the likes of ScoMo, the US Australian alliance and so forth. Of course, it's all about China and China at the moment. Mm. So that won't be the issue. But in terms of broader global international relations, I think it's going to be a massive setback. We've already seen a march away from the very imperfect liberal international order, from post-1945 liberal international order. So that's one thing that's, of course, occurred. And I think we're going to see a continual departure. We're going to see a lot more endorsement for poor behaviour mm-hmm. by other nation state leaders and so forth. Trump, make no mistake, has a big impact on other leaders around the world and in really endorsing poor behaviour. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
It's going to be really, really fascinating.
If he wins.
Yeah, if he wins. That's a good caveat. Dr. Aidan Warren, Associate Professor of International Relations at RMIT, thank you so very much for your time. We'll hope to chat to you again soon.
Anytime.